Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Pressure Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Pressure Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham.
Well, all right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, January 23rd, 2015. I am Rich Grisham. Thank you, as always, for listening. I'm always excited to do this show, but I'm excited in particular tonight for a bunch of reasons. I get a lot of people these days that ask me, how do I get into games? Or whether it's writing about them, podcasting about them, or making games. And the answer I give them is always a variation on the same theme, which is there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people out there who want to do the exact same thing that you're talking about, which is get into the games business in some capacity. The only way that you can make that happen for yourself is to go above and beyond the rest of them. You have to distinguish yourself because of your passion and your knowledge. You have to keep working. You have to be respectful of the people that you interact with. You got to keep working. You got to be open to constructive criticism. You got to keep working. You got to build your network. You got to keep working. You can't limit yourself. And above all, you have to keep on working. So it is with delight that I welcome for the first time, but absolutely not the last, a person who epitomizes all of these qualities, someone whose desire and passion drove him to be creative, who continued to work to produce content long after most other people would have given up, and who eventually became an influencer and a creator of the things that he had once talked about from the outside. The man known simply as Dzar, Mr. Nino Samuel. Mr. Samuel, welcome to the Press Row Podcast.
Rich, thank you. Thank you for such a fantastic and warm introduction. I am excited to be here, man. I almost want to say, hey, Mom, because I'm going to tell her and she's going to listen to this.
Good. I like it. I like it a lot. So, yes, Dzar, you are obviously on the NBA 2K team. You have a long history that we'll get in that we'll get into over the course of the show. But I want to start off with today. Your main gig is working on the NBA 2K development team. What is your specific role and how do you go about doing that these days?
All right. My specific role is I'm in charge of the offensive AI in offensive systems. So it's called AI and offensive systems, artificial intelligence. Part of that I have to keep up with the NBA, what schemes teams are running, different offenses, different themes that might be going on with the league. So part of that makes me virtually the lead scout for the 2K team on what teams are doing on the offensive end, how they're doing it, how often they're doing it. And then just in general, as I get better on the game development side, the team is trusting me with more other areas, like I may branch into substitution patterns, things like that. But mostly just anything really dealing with the artificial intelligence of your computer opponents and your computer teammates, really getting into that, trying to make them more responsive, more lifelike. You know, we don't want a Terminator situation where it actually comes to life, but you know, something just short of that, Rich.
So I'm already going to diverge. Can you tell me just exactly what my Brooklyn Nets offensive philosophy is these days? Because I certainly can't figure it out.
You know what? I don't think you or I are alone in trying to figure it out. There's some teams, Rich, that I scout that it's a joy to scout and you can see what's going on. And unfortunately, the Nets are falling under that where I can't figure out what the heck they're trying to do when I'm watching them. It takes forever to figure, you know. Oh, man, some teams are nice and they're running clean sets and some teams are like, well, what was that?
You are my last hope, Zari, my last hope. Well, you are also the main man behind Sim Nation, which is many things, but the way that I view it is a gathering of fellow basketball minds and many other things as well, which has grown to be a significant influence in the sports game community. And luckily for us, the Sim Nation continues, even as you have moved from the analysis and criticism side from the outside to the inside. What is Sim Nation really, and what has it helped spawn? You know, in not only the NBA 2K community, but in the sports gaming community at large?
Oh, man, great question. It It's really, really big. I think some people that come in on the end and hear about Sim Nation, they think it's just a hashtag. But I think you're exactly right. A collective, I think, of individuals who share common beliefs in gaming. And of course, Rich, with any gathering, you're going to have those people that the purist, right? That only believe in the purest version right. of thing, right. you know, and we try to stay away from extremes. But generally, guys that believe that a sim-style sports game should, as much as possible, you know, we're reasonable people, represent the sport they're attempting to replicate. And we really believe in fair and exploit-free competition. Think of it as fierce competition between gentlemen. And there's this saying that my mother taught me. I'm sure she plagiarized it from the Bible or someplace, but that he who is faithful in little is faithful in much. And I'm like, man, if we can get people to just say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to cheat you just to win this game. Then that might carry over into other areas of life. And, I've been doing this for a long time, and I've seen that. People have talked about the way that I carry myself, that it motivates them, that it helps them to be better in whatever field that they're going into. So, in a sense, it's bigger than games. And I don't know about you, Rich, but for myself, if I, you know, I was more into games than any of my really immediate friends.
Yes, me too. Absolutely.
And so, yes. And so when I got on the internet and I found people that were just as passionate about games as I was, it was just, I can't explain the feeling that came over me, but it was just this brotherhood feeling. And guys who are in the Sim Nation, when they see each other face to face, it's like long lost college buddies, right? I mean, you know, you're finding other guys that kept paper stats like you did. You know what I'm saying? Because you wanted to know how many points per game you averaged in whatever season it was. Yeah. So it's just guys that are excited and fired up about that and happy that there are other guys that are fired up about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about it quite a bit on the show. The thing that rescued sports gaming for me, was the Fourth String community, which was a community of Madden fans that was dedicated to being in an online league where everybody played the game the way that it should be played. It doesn't mean you can't have fun. It doesn't mean you have to go crazy with 100 rules, but it's just like-minded folks who wanted to play the game the right way. And I tell you, when you have that community, it can completely transform the way that you enjoy sports games, and Sim Nation is a significantly larger version of that. So now before we get into NBA, because I want to talk a lot of NBA 2K, a lot. Okay. But before we do that, so now, you know, we said where you are today and what you're doing today, but how did you get here? It's a fascinating story. How did you arrive? What I mean, you and I are, I think, in generally speaking, the same age or same age range. So you and I have both been playing games for a long time. What is your story as far as how you first got into video games and basketball games, and then how did you create the persona of Dazar and ultimately turn it into creating and influencing the actual game that you love to talk about so much?
Man, my dad was sort of a visionary of sorts. He had this idea, and this was long before everybody was really talking about computers and things like that. But he just had this idea. He told me, he's like, Nino, computers are going to be the future one day. And this is like in 78, 79. You know, I'm a young kid, and I'm like, yep. Okay, Dad, you know, whatever. So he goes to Costco, whatever it is. This is a few years later in the 80s, and he comes home with this Commodore computer.
Nice.
Yeah, so he comes home with this Commodore computer, and I start messing around with it, and I find out there are games for this thing.
Yeah.
And it just opened me up, man. I just, you know, there have been times when you have a great video game moment. It's a time in a game that you'll always remember. And I just kept having these moments where I was enjoying myself, you know, and you didn't have to have a whole crowd of people. You know what I'm saying? You just needed your computer or whatever your gaming system was. So that's what got me into gaming. And then I've always loved basketball. My dad was inducted into the Kansas, not the University of Kansas, but the State of Kansas Basketball Hall of Fame.
Wow, that's awesome.
So Yeah, thank you. And thank you. Well, thank him, I guess. He did all the work. But, so I've always been around great coaching. I've always been around people that understood the game. I played a little bit myself. And so I had these two great loves in my life, Rich. It was video games and it was basketball. And it was basketball and it was video games. And if I had to choose, I actually loved video games more than I love basketball. Man, sometimes I tell the story that I said, I think I might be the only Division I player in America that scheduled his doctor's appointments
right
on the days when games came out. So I could skip practice and play all afternoon.
We're kindred spirits, my friend, kindred spirits.
So that's how that started. And I tell you when it really basketball and video games mixed for me, when I found out there was a game called Lakers versus Celtics.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
Rich, yeah. It blew my mind. How far it blew my mind, man, is that my friends, I had these two friends, because I didn't even know what a Sega Genesis was at the time. I would go over their house, and they've got this game. Rich, they put it in, and I was locked in, man. I played for like 4 hours straight, and then there were, you know, it was time for me to go. I bartered with these guys. I was not leaving their house without this game system, Rich. So I bartered with them. I gave them my shoe. Whatever I had to give them, I took the system home. I played all weekend. Oh, yeah. And I was open after that, man. You know, seeing Tom Chambers take off from the three-point line.
Oh, yeah. Yep. It's amazing because my grandfather told me the same thing that your dad did. He's like, computers are the future. Get good at computers and you will be successful. And they, you know, he helped get me an Apple IIe. So your Commodore was my Apple IIe. You know, it was, you know, my first basketball game was Larry Bird versus Dr. J. You know, it was the same kind of thing, man. I was excited. I would obsess. I would play Micro League Baseball and Super Sunday Football and Dr. J versus Larry Bird as much as I possibly could. It took over my brain.
Oh, man. You know what, Richard? I think guys like, I say this all the time, guys like you and I that went through the growth and the evolution of video games, I don't think anybody appreciates where we are today more than us. Mm. You know, we're able to acknowledge that a game has flaws, but not allow that to keep us from having a good time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's what it's all about at the end of the day is, did you have an enjoyable experience? So as we move on, what happened, Rich, and I don't know who this guy was, and if it's you, I'm sorry, but somebody, 2K3 had came out, and somebody at a big site at the time, I don't remember the site, but he came out with this article saying how basketball games don't really, shouldn't really have a lot of strategy, there's no need to really have plays, and when 2K4 came out, it seemed like they took that advice to heart.
Oh, no.
And I hated 2K4. And so I just had one of those moments, Rich, where I snapped and I said, listen, if anybody, because I said, it appears that they listen to this guy, but I don't think this guy really understands the sport. So I said, if gaming companies are going to listen to anybody, shouldn't it be the most passionate guys? Shouldn't it be the guys that spend hours and hours and hours playing this game or at least understand the sport? And so I took that as my mission statement. I said, man, I have to become an influencer. You know, I don't know how I'm going to do it at this stage, but I know more than that guy. That's all I knew. That's all I knew. And then I was at a site called Operation Sports.
Oh, yes.
And this was back in the glory days of Operation Sports, Rich, when everybody who posted was knowledgeable about games and sports. And it was just like I was a member for years before I would even make a post. Because if you didn't know what you were talking about, you could get your lunch handed to you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes.
So
I'm familiar.
I was at work bored at lunch one day and there was a video of a real NBA game being played. And so I went into the forums and I just started breaking down possession by possession what was going on. And, you know, guys were kind of feeling it. They were like, all right, that's pretty cool. So I said, well, let me come up with a character. And at the time, the czar, the telestrator, was real big. He was doing the NBA game. So yeah, I put Mike the Patella. Duh. Yeah, Mike Fratello. I put the duh in front of that. I said, so I'm Dazar, and I will break down the games via, via words. Mm-hmm. And I say, okay, at the 2-minute mark, this is what happened. This is what happened. And guys were feeling that. And, you know, that was kind of taken off. But I was like, man, there's got to be a way I can get my point across without all this typing. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So that's when I moved into doing videos. And after I started doing the videos, Rich, is really when everything took off. I did a video, I think, called Understanding Momentum in 2K7, mm-hmm. I think. And then that was soon followed by 'Twas the Night Before 2K7. Mm. And when we did that, I'm kind of a weird guy, right? I like to do new things, fresh things, you know? So every time we would do a video, I'd say, well, how can we one up with that? You know, how can we one up that? How can we make it more interesting? And my wife and I do music also. Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, listen, I'll make some music. Mm-hmm. You sing on it, you know? And then I did a little poetry and just anything to make it interesting. And things kind of picked up from there. And, that's how I got started. It was all from that one article that infuriated me.
I tell you, whatever the spark is, that's all you need is that spark. So over time, you became known for breaking stuff down, for criticism, for praise, and ultimately, you found your way to the 2K team. And it hasn't been that long that you've actually been officially affiliated with NBA 2K. So how did that process happen? I mean, did they reach out to you? Do you reach out to them? I mean, obviously, with the internet now, they're it's completely different. You know, with social media and things. Frankly, it's one of the reasons this show is able to be successful is because I've been able to bring people onto the show, you know, by connecting directly via social media, and you and I are a perfect example of that. So how did it come about to where, you know, you made your way onto the team? Was it you? Was it them? Was it a chance meeting? I'm curious.
It's an interesting story. I'm not sure I remember every bit and piece of it because it happened over a considerable amount of time. Rob Jones, who was the lead gameplay producer at the time, had seen my videos. And one day I was on Operation Sports, and this was back when they had the chat. OS used to have the chat where you could click on somebody's name and you could chat directly with them. And it was Rob Jones, and he hit me up via the chat, and I was like, oh, my gosh, it's Rob Jones. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I was terribly excited. So, you know, we started talking back and forth just a little bit, and that's how it started. And he'd ask me some direct questions about the games or something, ask me further information about something maybe I said in a video or something, some press that they put out with it, I think. And so we went back and forth for a while, and Rob really – mentored me on the business side of the business, on getting in depth about what making games is really about, that it's not just about having knowledge of a sport, some things I might want to look into. So really he took on a big brother role for me. And that was really the genesis of everything starting off. If it wasn't for Rob Jones, I certainly wouldn't be where I am today. And, I'll always be grateful to him for that, for reaching out to me. And from there, you know, I would start taking trips up to 2K just as a community member. So I go up there as a community member. You know, they ask for feedback. I give some feedback, this, that. And so that went on for a little while. And then one time when I was up there, Rich, I was up there one time. And they had this small little project that nobody really had time to do. And so I just volunteered. I said, hey, you know, I'm from the community. You know, give me a shot at it, you know. So they were like, they didn't really think much of it, you know. So they said, all right, you know, go for it. So I went for it. And, Rich, I did it like one of us would do. You know what I'm saying?
Like you cared about it, right? Like you actually put time and thought and effort. Yep.
Yep. You know, just like somebody from the community, you've been given a chance, you know, getting to one of those gaming companies, like the golden ticket, right? You want to take full advantage of it. So I worked on it, man, and I put my all into it. And to them, it was something relatively insignificant. That's why they let me, you know, they gave me a shot at it. But when my time was due and it was time for me to leave, I told them, hey, you know, I did the best I could. Here it is. And they were appreciative and, you know, went on my way. And I got back home, Rich, and I was like, you know what? If I had another week, I bet you I could do a fantastic job on that. So I called Rob. I told him, man, listen, I want to come back up. And he was like, oh, okay, you have to pay your own way, whatever. So I paid my own way. I went back up there, got my own hotel, and I spent a week of my own time just working on this thing again. And I thought I did a fantastic job. To this day, nobody has said anything, but I'm sure it was pretty decent, right? So I think that showed some type of effort, some type of initiative that, you know, actually, I think they thought I was crazy that I would come up, that I would take my own way to come up there to finish something that was that small. But that's kind of how it started. It started in with a little insignificant project. And then when they looked at it, Rich, in I know a lot of people from the community say, hey, we'll just have somebody, you know, you should let this guy come up and he'll do it for free. Well, the problem that with that is that these companies have lawyers. Mm-hmm. And the lawyers looked at the work that I did and they were like, hey, you know what? We're going to have to pay him for that. Mm. You know, and I was like, no, I don't want to be paid. And they were like, no, you know, this could cause some problems. And so It was on accident how that whole situation started. And then it just really kind of grew from there. And I had the support of other people on the team because 2K is just a wonderful, wonderful working environment. And so, you know, it was Rob that brought me in. But then you got just a plethora of individuals, Mike Wang. You know, I could spend an hour just naming people and each one of them would share with me their area of expertise. So as the years went by, I get more and more knowledgeable about the process of making games. And it was really I just really feel blessed to have had that opportunity. But the thing was, Rich, is that I didn't in your introduction, you talked about you kept saying keep working. And that's the thing that you have to do. Before my breakthrough came, Rich, I almost quit. Mm-hmm. Because I had worked for so long and I didn't hear from anybody. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine named Andre Key talked to me. I didn't think about quitting. I had quit. I said, I'm not doing this anymore. And Dre talked to me. He said, man, you're such a key member of the community. What you're doing is helping all of us. He's like, they got to see what you're doing. Just don't stop. Don't quit. And I lied to you not, Rich, not 30 days later is when Rob Jones reached out to me. And the rest is history, as they say.
That is fantastic. I love it. All right. So here's the deal. I love me some NBA 2K15, as do many of our listeners and many in the Operation Sports community. So can we dive into some NBA 2K for a bit? I got a whole mess of stuff to talk about.
Certainly. Certainly.
All right. So first of all, there's NBA 2K15. It's huge. Like, there's a lot to it, right? There's a lot to what's happening on the court. There's a lot of modes. You got my player. You got my team. You got, you know, my GM. You got my league. You got, you know, the NBA today. You got the park. What's your personal favorite way to play the game? What's your go-to mode? You know, you're like, all right, I got 45 minutes. I want to play some NBA 2K. Where do you go?
I go to my league. You know, nice. It's funny. I know what the PS4 is. It's all about social gaming, but I go back to my roots when it was just me in the room. You know what I'm saying? Like, gaming was my escape.
Yeah. Yes.
So I lock into a serious My League, and I don't come out, you know, until the controller's smoking.
You know, one of the things I love about My League is that you can put the historic teams in there. And a project that I'm working on right now, where I'm playing an entire season with a whole bunch of the historic teams in My League, and I'm sort of putting them in, you know, in various divisions, rank, you know, sort of not seeded, but, you know, trying to mix them up and stuff, and having a ton of fun with that. So I totally know where you're coming from. So I know 5-on-5 is, that's a big area of your expertise. So let's talk about that. Just 5-on-5, straight up hoops. What's the best way to get really deep into the things that separate NBA 2K15 from its predecessors? You know, like, not only things like running plays, but like understanding what to do with them and using the right plays for your team and the types of players that you have, things like that. Because there is so much going on in NBA 2K. I hear a lot of people who really like the game, just they seem to be stuck at that very top layer, that entry level. And I know from especially watching the SimNation Hangouts and listening to you, there's a whole lot more going on. What's the best way to truly discover those kinds of things?
Man, that's a good question, Rich. I would say the 2K Smart Play button is your friend. That we put a lot of work into trying to make the game as simple as possible. And whenever you get your player in a position, you're not sure what to do, you hold that 2K Smart Play and it will give you the best play, the best quick play for your team, for the people that are on the floor right then and there. And then if you're advanced enough to use points of emphasis, we've tied that smart play in with points of emphasis. So if you have one favorite player and you're like, hey, well, I choose play through Joe Johnson, right?
Right.
When you activate the smart play, we're going to give you plays as often as possible, as long as he's in a decent position, to get Joe Johnson the ball in positions to score. And that works with our freelance offenses. That works with our half court offenses. Just anytime, any place you get in trouble, you press that button. And I think that'll make the game a lot more accessible. I think we can do a better job of teaching users how to use that. But we put a lot of work into it. There's a lot of logic behind it. And people who start using it start to see, man, this is a really, really good tool. And a lot of the hardcore guys like to do their own plays or what have you. But even myself, if I'm playing online versus another user, it's late in the shot clock. I got maybe 10, 12 seconds left. I'll use that smart play to get either great spacing or get a nice quick hitter.
Now, I use smart plays regularly. I'm basically playing two modes right now. I'm deep into my career with the single player, which we're going to talk about a little more later. But I'm also playing a full 82-game season with my video game nets, which, by the way, are much more fun to play with and watch than the real-life nets. I'll be straight up with you right there. And I use smart play sometimes, particularly when I've gone through a rough stretch. And maybe it's just because of the team, but one of the things that I've noticed is I'm wondering if it's accurate or if it's just because it's the, you know, the team that I'm playing. It seems like there's about three different plays that I'll get when I call the smart play. You know, it's one will be a screen, you know, where I'll move whoever has the ball, typically the point guard. Darren Williams has been hurt for the last month, so now it's Jarrett Jack. You know, he'll get a screen set for him, then he'll move around it, and then he'll be open to take the shot. Or it'll be an isolation with either, you know, the shooting guard or the point guard. Or it'll want me to post it up, download a Brook Lopez before I traded him. I lost three games in a row, and I got an offer from Minnesota. So I'm like, all right, you're out of here, Brook. And I got a lot of, by the way, a lot of grief from Scott O'Gallagher about that deal. So is that just because of the Nets, or are those kind of the three sort of go-to modes or go-to plays that you get typically when you call for that smart play?
Well, there's two ways to engage the smart play. One is before you cross half court. If you call it before you cross half court, you have more time, and it's going to get deeper into your playbook and get you a look out of there. Once you cross half court, depending on where your player is, we look at your player's play types. So if you have a guy whose number one play type is isolation, then we prefer to get him in isolation.
Got it.
So you can switch those play types if you'd like to start seeing maybe some different actions. But if a guy is really good at that, unfortunately, we're going to try to give that to you a lot. So it may not be giving you enough variety, and that's something maybe we could look at looking forward to 2K16.
Well, I don't even know if I need more variety, because typically I do get put into a good position. I haven't played a lot of games with other teams, so that's why I was curious.
Yeah, we tried to base it, and it's also based around what freelance offense you're in. If you change your freelance offense, then we'll probably give you some different looks. Even though that player is still an isolation player, you might have different spacing. Maybe we'll post them up in different areas. So we tried to make it so that it conforms to what you as a user chose as your settings as often as possible. Sometimes when there's not a quick play available, let's say you are trying to run an isolation for your center, and we didn't think that a lot of people would do that, then we may not have a lot of quick play coverage for that, because that's an unusual request. So then you would get a play out of your playbook, and that could also be why you're getting the same play.
So let's talk about freelance offense. What exactly is freelance offense, and what does that mean to me? I mean, how do I make that happen, and how do I use freelance offense to its best effect?
Freelance offense is interesting because it's something that has been in every basketball game, every major five-on-five basketball game. And it's just the default thing that your team does if you happen not to call a play. And before this year, they were basically all the same for all 30 teams. No matter which team you had, they would run the same freelance offense. And so what we did this year was we provided some custom freelance offenses. So we changed it, and that's never been done before. So now you have multiple ways that you can play. And the freelance offenses, in addition to using the quick play or the 2K smart play button, gives you a variety of ways to score, especially when you combine that with points of emphasis. So we didn't want it to be necessarily a stumbling block. When you're a freelance, man, just pass to the open guy, see what's available, you know, and anytime you get caught, just hit the 2K smart play, and then we'll give you a smart action that comes out of that offense. So, for example, we wanted people to be able to run the triangle offense without knowing how to run the triangle offense.
Right.
You know, so you get where you think you should be. You hold that 2K smart play button. We evaluate the players on the floor. We evaluate your points of emphasis. And then we'll say, hey, pass to this guy and pass to that guy. And we'll get you in position to score. And so it's supposed to be simple. Now, are you having problems with it, Rich?
No. It's just the kind of thing where, like, there's so much going on in NBA 2K, and, like, you know, you're given a lot of information, but at no point do you see, like, I would be willing to bet that 85% of the people, and it's a completely impossible stat to prove, so I can say it, you know, free from any sort of worry about actually being accurate. But I would bet you that 85% of the people playing NBA 2K don't even know what the term freelance offense means, nor do they know that they're actually in the middle of it. But what it means to me is that when I don't call the smart play, that's why Joe Johnson tends to be open. You know, if I just play the game the right way, if I take the ball down, you know, with the point guard, and I don't just try to shove the point guard into the paint and take a wild shot. You know, if I pass it around and move it around, the guys tend to move in a way that makes sense. And then ultimately some guy gets open. To me, that's what freelance offense is. Do I have that right?
You have it on the money. And then there's just different ways in which a guy gets open, different ways in which you play with your teammates. You know, some go from very simple, which would be the 80s freelance, and some are very complex, which would probably be the Spurs swing motion offense. And I tell you, Rich, we certainly can do a better job of educating the user on what we have there. Certainly this first year, I wanted to get as much in the game as possible. And there's that level between, okay, I can put one of these in and do a super in-depth tutorial, or I can put them all in.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what I was looking at. But that's certainly something that we'll look to in the future. That's the thing that has always impressed me about the 2K games. And maybe it's something that obviously we can do a better job at, is that there is so much stuff in these games that really it's hard to tell you about everything that's in the game before the game comes out. So the game just kind of continually reveals itself to you the more you play. And with the classic 2Ks, I know as a fan, that was always something that I enjoyed, that the more I played it, the more I could see, man, this happened. You know, I'd never seen this play before. I had never seen this situation evolve like it did. But the opposite side of that is that sometimes we don't give the users all the information that they may need to get the fullness out of the game.
You know, it's a perfect segue to my next question, which is what do you feel, right? And you were a community guy. Now you're making the game. What do you feel is the responsibility of the game itself to teach players about these things versus community people making videos and Operation Sports forums providing conversations versus the users themselves just figuring it out, right? Because like you said, you have a certain finite amount of time and resources. If you're going to dedicate 2 or 3 or 4 weeks to making tutorials, that's 2 or 3 or 4 weeks worth of development that's not happening. What do you think the balance, the responsibility lies for sort of instructing players inside the game versus letting other people sort of create that perhaps organically?
That's a good question. I think having the tools so that somebody can explain it, I think that's the responsibility of the people making the game. So at the very least, there should be some place where you can go to practice, at least work it out on your own. You know, we'd love to have people in the community come out and really, you know, with the death of instruction booklets, et cetera, a lot of people just go directly to YouTube to find out how to play games.
Yeah.
And so you definitely have to have that community tie-in. You want to make your game accessible so that people feel like they can learn it and that they can teach others, you know, but I think it's a situation, Rich, that I think is going to continue to evolve.
Yeah.
I think especially as this game continues to grow, I think more of that responsibility will shift to us as we get more people coming in that are not as familiar with the sport. And I tell you, I thought Madden did an excellent job with their skills trainer and how they explained the game. And I thought that was a fantastic job. And when I saw that was really eye-opening as a way to introduce people to the higher levels of strategy in your games. And I think as games continue to grow, you're going to see that. I think you'll see that across the board because, you know, it's not really a niche thing anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like there are tons and tons of people playing.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that really – I've always enjoyed my career last year and this year especially – but one of the things that made my career even better was when I went into the settings and I changed the setting to say, you know, basically tell me what I'm supposed to do on the floor, you know, put those icons and those arrows.
Oh, yeah.
And that completely changed the game because now I don't have to guess where I'm supposed to be or what I'm supposed to be doing. And I don't always follow those instructions, but boy, when I do, I have more success. And I was surprised that that's not the default setting for my player because I bet you a whole bunch of people going to my player, I mean, I've heard them tell me directly, like, I just run all over the place and call for the ball, and when I get it, I shoot. I'm like, well, that's not going to work well for you over the long haul.
You know, Richard, that's it's an interesting thing because there's that user that doesn't want to be told anything.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you also have users that don't like seeing a whole bunch of play art on the floor and it takes them out of their experience. And that's the thing where, you know, once you get on this side, you kind of understand that, man, people love to play the game however they love to play it. And so
don't you tell me how to play my basketball game.
Exactly. You know, so that's always a balancing act. You know, we have a lot of conversation about should we turn that on? Should we turn it off? Because some people don't know that you can turn things off. You know, there are some people that never go into the settings.
Right.
So that's a big topic of debate for us in trying to find that line where we're not angering too many people. And you know, I always say err on the side of making the experienced people find it. Somebody like myself or you, we're going to find the setting. We'll turn it on. We'll turn it off. But again, I think as the game evolves, you know, we'll find that line and straddle it properly.
Yeah. So one of the many things I enjoy about NBA 2K, it does a good, maybe not a great, but it certainly does a good job of making the personalities of players stand out. Case in point, last night I'm playing my career. I've got my dude. He's a shooting guard for the Phoenix Suns in year two. And James Harden absolutely destroyed me. Just made me look silly. I mean, it was I have had more than a couple of times that I sort of think of, you know, Bird versus Dominique, where nobody's guarding anybody. They're just shooting bombs all over the court, right? I mean, he just crushed me. No matter what I did, he got open. He went around me. He went through me. He went over me. It was insane. At the end, he wound up hitting a three to win the game as time expired. It was crushing. What do you think is the best example of 2K? What's your sort of favorite example of how you make the personalities and attributes of these players really shine more than most sports games have the opportunity to do because of the nature of basketball? You know, there's no helmets, there's no face masks. You know, people know these players.
I look at things like our Ecomotion engine and how the emotion of a player is now tied into what type of player he is, you know, and I look at those things over the course of my league, right? I look at things that we put in there, such as guys knowing when it's a big game and certain guys playing better against their old, you know, their old teams. You know, these are things that maybe we could bring to the surface a little bit better, but they're there. And if you notice carefully, these are all the things that are happening underneath. And then what we do at an animation level and at a gameplay level just enhances that. So when you get locked into a great experience and you know, you're playing a guy and the guy's going off, and then you happen to look and see and check his badges and you see that, oh man, you know, this guy, you know, he's doing everything that he's supposed to do. I think that makes for a great experience. And I think we're just now really chipping away at that. I mean, there's so much more to do in those areas, especially as far as artificial intelligence, how the AI thinks, how the AI looks and reads you as a defender, how he attacks you. I mean, for myself, I'm very excited on where we're going to go. And if you like it how it is now, you know, just strap in. You know, my boy Scott, who you know takes it personal anytime anybody scores 50 in my career. He takes it personal. And you know, he's watching guys play. He watches their lits plays. He analyzes what they're doing, and he's coming up with stuff to stop it. So expect more of a challenge in the future.
Oh, no. I don't want more of a challenge. I'm good. I'm good with the challenge level. I want to be successful, man. I mean, I've been working, my guy. So, I mean, I tell you, the whole my player thing, it's its own universe to me. I mean, I got, you know, no offense, but I don't spend money on VC. I earn it. I play every game. I don't sim a thing. I got the 2K app on my phone. Every day I go pick that night's games. Every day I get my cards. I get the VC that way. Whatever I can do, man. I can't say it's my favorite because I love my GM too, but boy, it's so good. And warts and all, because to me, the reason my player is so interesting is because it really separates itself. You play NBA 2K differently. You control one person, and you have all these interactions with players and coaches and media and agents and so on. And it can go on for a long time. Like I said, I'm currently like well into my second year, and because I'm a maniac and I play every game, you know, and I know people like to complain or pick out individual aspects of it, you know, and hey, you know, you pay your money for a game. You have a right to do that. But when you embrace that mode for what it is, not super serious, you have some fun, you know, and at the end of the day, you just get down to business on the court and you take your guy like to the park. I mean, it's great. Do you get that sense from the community as well, you know, the about my player in particular, because it is such a individualized experience, different than the other ways that people play 2K?
Absolutely. And here's the thing. People, as you said, people have a right to complain or to want things to be different. But when I look at some of these streams, guys are having a good time. You know what I'm saying? Like the guys are in the park. They're playing with some of the buddies. They're talking some noise. Yep. You know?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You know, and I understand people have things that they want better or things that they want different. But the concept, the base concept of how that mode is put together, how it's executed, the whole concept of having a park, you know, and being able to walk around. You got guys with different walks. You know, you can't help but think that that is somewhat successful, even if there's some things we can adjust, some things we can make better. But it's an enjoyable experience. Sometimes I'd like to take my player to the park and just watch some games, you know, mm-hmm. watch how guys are playing and interacting with each other. And, you know, as the gameplay gets tighter and it gets better, I think that those games are just going to get more and more competitive. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I really like some of the interesting little touches. So, for example, you know, at the end of the first year, when you have the option to go to different teams or stay with your home or, you know, with the team that you were with, I noticed that if I stayed with my Phoenix Suns, I get more VC every game by staying with them. And no. I'm like, wow, that's great. That's just like the NBA where, you know, a player can get more money if he stays, you know, with his team. You know, and VC is so valuable to your player. My guy's up to like an 88 now. I maxed out a couple of skill sets, but I still got a long way to go with the other ones. I plan on having him maxed out as soon as possible. But, you know, it really to me feels like my player in particular has a really good balance right now where you don't have to spend more than the $60 that you spent to be able to have an experience that rewards you but still makes you feel like you're working. And, you know, a lot of people call me a 2K fanboy, but that's all right. You know, we'll get into some more VC stuff later. But I mean,
yeah, I tell you, you're in good company. I've been called EA fanboy, 2K fanboy. It comes with the territory, Rich. Yeah, but you're a brother after my own heart, man, because I believe in the grind. You know what I'm saying? I grind it out, man. Is it sadness, Rich, when you log into the app and you're 2 hours early and now you got to wait?
Oh, I hate that.
I can't stand it because invariably I won't remember at that 2 hour mark, and now it's later in the day, and now I have to wait later the next day.
Yeah, and then you just like, you're like, oh my God, I actually might have missed a day. Like, over the course of this week, I've now cost myself a day. Oh my God. That's awesome. All right, so my GM, I've talked about that a bit. I love my GM. I'm doing my true 82 with my Brooklyn Nets. I've made it past the All-Star break. I'm doing well, but I'm struggling a little bit. I made some changes. One of the questions I have for you, you know, you get, and I don't know how, you know, how familiar you are with some of the nuances of my GM, but my GM is huge. There's all of this stuff going on, right? Like, not only are you playing the games and making trades and setting the rotations and stuff like that, but you're interacting with the media, you're interacting with your players, you're interacting with your owner, and then there's all of these, you know, then you got, you know, the finances and the pricing and stuff, and you got these badges and stuff like that. Like, one of the issues I'm currently facing is that my team morale is in like the mid-70s because I just traded away a few players, and I got a badge that says, you know, you can use this to get your morale back up to 100, but like, I can't figure out how to use it. Does it just automatically get applied? Do you know how that works? I've been Googling, I've been looking all over to figure out. I got this badge, it says it's available. How do I use this dang thing to get my morale back up to 100?
I do not know the answer to that question, but I'll get back to you on that.
I'll
check with Secret Squirrels and see what's going on. As you said, man, that mode, each individual mode is so big. I don't know if it, you know, because some people buy the game just to play a specific mode. There are people that only play online. There are people that only play my league or just my GM. Some play both. But each individual mode, man, there's so much love and care that goes into each one that those things are really big. You get guys like Leftos and that team that they play those modes a lot. You know what I'm saying? So they want it to be beefy enough to keep them involved and to keep it, you know, to keep them mentally engaged. And this game is huge. You said it when we first started talking.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that more now than I did before. I thought it was big before, but now I know it's a big game.
And another reason I like my GM, in addition to the fact that it's just really in depth and fun, is that I can play it even if I'm not connected to the internet. For the last week or so, my internet has not worked. And you can't really play a lot of NBA 2K if it's not connected to the internet. But you got your MyGM and your MyLeague, and you can, and you're fine. And I'm curious because of a lot of the backlash that happened last year, particularly with the launch of the PS4 version of NBA 2K14, sort of everything being tied to being able to be online. Was that a explicit decision that was made to make sure there's a few things that you can get the full experience doing without having to necessarily be connected to the mothership?
Absolutely.
Good to know.
That's all I'll say on that.
Good to know.
The community was heard loud and clear.
Well, that's good. But I mean, I will say, and again, I mean, I sound like I'm kissing up, but it's true. I mean, it's clear to me, and we've spoken about this in the past on the show, that the 2K team is listening, right? Not just with how some of the design decisions were made, you know, as far as VC, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but also things like roster updates, like with what you guys are doing with the roster updates, and related to that is wildly more valuable and more often and more impactful than has ever happened before. I would imagine that's also a direct result of the feedback that not only you have provided, but now that you're on the team, you're hearing from the community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mike B. Edwards Roy does an excellent job with our roster. When you look at the leaders of our company, Greg Thomas, Jeff Thomas, these guys are gamers, you know, and they more than anybody, any other heads of a company I've ever seen are in touch with what's going on with the community. If something's happening, they're aware of it. We're talking about it. We're discussing ways to mitigate it or what have you. So, you know, it's really shocking, you know, when you go in there and you're talking to these guys and you figure, you know, they're kind of keeping an eye on things, but no, they know what's going on with their game. It's impressive. It's very impressive. It can also be a little scary to have your boss know that much about what's going on in the community.
It does speak, though. I think it does speak to the world we live in now in 2015. I've heard you talk about it before on the Sim Hangouts and on some other shows. In fact, like Spawn on Me, the show that you were on last week that I was supposed to be on but had to travel. But you know, you've mentioned that you can get as a developer, you can get inside that bubble, and it feels to me like the 2K team is now outside of that bubble, and I believe that it's a direct correlation to people like yourself and Leftos and Scott O'Gallagher, guys who started in the community and made their way into games, being part of it. Is that a direct correlation, or was it like that before you and others like you joined the 2K team?
I think definitely to a smaller extent, it was there. As I told you, Rob Jones reached out to me. Mike Wang has always been a guy who's been aware of what's going on with the community. I think that guys like myself, Leftos and Scott, though, kind of tipped the boat over and like, hey, guys, let's really dive in there, you know? Like, you know, we're like, there's some really good stuff in there. And because you've listened to our show a few times, you know, those guys don't hold back.
If there's something, they don't. They make me feel dumb. I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't know that was going on. I remember, like, one of the most startling things I heard on the show that once I heard it, I realized it. Books mentioned, he's like, you know, the guys move differently on defense than they do on offense. And that just, like, the light bulb went off over my head, and I'm like, wow, he's right. That's completely right. I did not notice that. Here I am, quote-unquote, professional game reviewer guy, feeling like a dope because I didn't notice this stuff. But, I mean, you guys, it's one of the things about Sim Nation, man. You open yourself up, and you let those guys come after you. It's really interesting to watch.
Thank you. But, you know, that's one thing I wanted to avoid. Scott wants to avoid, Leftos wants to avoid the bubble as much as possible. Right. And to do that, you have to have people that care about you enough to tell you the truth, but also do so in a manner that's respectful. And so we know when those guys come on the show that they are hearing what's going on out there and they're going to let us know about it. And so it's really a thing of trust that we built up over the years, you know, and it's a valuable tool. I tell you, it's invaluable because you can really get into a bubble and think, hey, those are users. They don't know what's really going on, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, having that, like I said, myself, Scott, Leftos, B-Eds, guys that came up from the community, you can't just cut that off. You know what I'm saying? Like there's always we're always searching the forums. We're always doing this. We're always doing that. We're always on social media because it's become a habit. And I think it's going to help us to make a better game because of that.
So one of the questions I have for you is when you're making design decisions or you're providing feedback, or you're thinking, how am I supposed to work? How am I supposed to make this better? Who do you have in mind when you're considering it? Do you have, you know, like the guys from Sim Nation in mind, like I'm doing this for them? Or you got goofballs like me who think we know basketball. We really don't know anything about basketball. We just, you know, we can talk a good game. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I would just, like, sit in the corner. If you guys have the Sim Nation hangout, I'd be like, I'm not worthy. Like, when you're making your decisions, who do you think about when you're coming up with this stuff?
Well, I tell you, that's one of the great things about the team that we have. Every gamer is represented on the development team. Everybody has a segment of the population that they're really looking after. And so when you share your ideas and your concepts, you're getting that immediate feedback. You know, somebody's telling you, well, for the type of gamer that I am or the games that I like to play, you know, you should think about this, that, or the other thing. I think intrinsically, I think about Sim Nation issues automatically. So I don't have to go out of my way to design for them. I think you know, all I have to do is make something that's based on basketball principles. And I think that's kind of what I try to do. And then try to extend it to say, hey, how can somebody who doesn't know a lot about basketball also enjoy this as well? You know, so I think because of how I came up, I think I start from Sim Nation, those type of people naturally, because I'm thinking I want to make a game that's based on reality. And then I have to extend myself to say, hey, if there's somebody coming in that knows nothing about this, how can we make this simple? How can we make this clean? How can we make this more efficient? And that's a lot of that work went into the freelance offenses and the 2K smart play and things of that nature.
All right. So let's veer into a couple other directions. Now, VC is a topic that's always controversial. It was extremely controversial for its implementation last year. And many people, including myself, didn't necessarily like how it was ultimately designed as far as VC impacted every aspect of the game, you know, from not just my player, but also, you know, my league or my GM or the various modes. Were you one of those people? And did you have an influence on how VC was sort of reallocated this year?
I definitely felt the community's pain with what went on with the VC last year. And so on any internal meetings, I was certainly voicing that needed to be something that we looked at and that we addressed. Now, those decisions happened at levels above me.
Sure.
But everywhere where I could, you know, I was saying, hey, I think we need to look at another direction for this. I think there were a few people on the dev team that were also in agreement. And I think looking at the feedback again, you know, I think it was clear. I don't think it was anything that we had to do really a hard sell on.
Presentation is a big topic, especially as we've gotten into the next generation and, you know, these super high definition sports games. It's something I really wanted to talk with you about. There are so many discussions about it. And personally, I think I've got a different take on presentation than a lot of people do. First of all, NBA 2K15, it's regarded as one of the best, the slickest games when it comes to the presentation. You got, you know, Shaq and Kevin and those guys at the start. You got your sideline interviews. You got the in-game, you know, information that pops up. The commentary is really good a lot, you know, and so on. And it seems like NBA 2K, as well as, you know, the other major sports games, are pursuing the it's got to look like it's TV. But I, on the other hand, I kind of wish that it would go in another direction entirely. To me, it seems that sports video games have the opportunity to do something completely different and immerse you in the experience, like giving game players a window into what it's really like to be a player on the court and like a coach on the sidelines, you know, hearing the crowd and the players and the refs in the arena. Do you agree that there's an opportunity to separate and perhaps differentiate the experience to be something other than just attempting to mirror television, or am I nuts? And is really it, you know, is the sort of current direction for these games of making it look like TV the right way to go?
I'm not sure if it's the right way to go, Rich, but I think even super casual people are used to seeing the game presented in a certain way, you know, and I think it's comforting to a certain extent to have it look like it does on television. Mm-hmm. Like you have guys that won't play with a different camera angle, even though they play better from that camera angle because it doesn't look like it does on TV.
Yeah.
You know, and people are really kind of particular about how they consume their sports. Some people, and it also speaks to the guys that want to feel like, hey, this is my team. I'm the GM of this team, and I want it to look like it does on TV. You know, so it adds a certain level of authenticity. We do have in 2K, you can play with your sound settings and change it to where you are on the, you know, either hear it from the stands or what have you. I hear where you're, you know, where you, I hear your thoughts where you're wanting to go. I think that might be dangerous for a team to completely forego the TV experience because it's been done for so long.
Sure.
You know, but certainly as a secondary mode, maybe something that you can do. It's interesting. It's an interesting concept.
I mean, I'm sure I know you're a Madden player, right? And I'm sure you played the intro to Madden this year where they sort of took a different approach, not a crazy approach, but sort of a hybrid. It sort of made you feel a little bit more like you're in it. And I definitely think, like, my player, for example, has an opportunity to where it's interesting how it goes back and forth. Like, at some points, you're talking to your coach. He's like, all right, go and get in the game. You're like, all right, I'm going in, baby. You know? And then all of a sudden, you're in, and then you hear the TV commentators and stuff. Like, it's an interesting hybrid. And it seems to me like that's probably the best opportunity to sort of really – you know, take players someplace where they didn't even realize they want to go. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think a lot of people think they want it to be like TV because they don't realize what it really could be, at least in some of these modes. But again, I'm probably nuts, but that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately.
No, I don't necessarily think you're nuts. I think also in a mode, like you're saying, in a my career mode, that can kind of take off, I think, you know. So, you know, I'll put that in my bag of tricks, Rich.
Oh, I love that. Sweet. All right. All right. So speaking of something that I'm nuts about, online leagues. I love online leagues. I'm in an online Madden league. We are crazy about it. We have a lot of fun. We're in year two. We're about to hit year three. Online leagues in NBA 2K, the online association, was one of my go-to modes for years. It has struggled out of the gate. Last year, online leagues were sort of there, but they didn't really work. This year, they're a little bit better. In that, you know, you can kick players if you need to, if somebody decides to abandon it, but it's still kind of, it's not really, you know, you can't have three or four of your buddies playing in a full NBA season, you know, just four of you with, and the rest CPU. Can you bring those back? I've asked Scott on the show. I might as well ask you. Can you bring those back for me? Even if it's just for me, I would really
For you, Richard. I tell you what, we'll discuss it. but you know what? You're not alone. Scott's a big online league guy. You know, when you get in a great online league, it's an experience that can't be replicated. Absolutely. And even though I work on the AI, you can't replicate that.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Especially with three or four of your buddies. You know, I've seen guys that have 30 team leagues. You know what I'm saying?
And they're dedicated. I'm one of those guys. Trust me. I am.
Yes. Yeah. So we're fighting for it. You know, we're talking about it anytime it gets brought up. You know, we have guys like yourself in mind. And but again, you know, those are things that the yay or nay on those happen a bit above us. But Scott and I are in there throwing bowls for you.
Nice. I like to hear that. And again, I'm a realist. I understand it's expensive to do those things, and you know, everything that you do when you make a game is also a decision not to do something else. So I totally get that. But it's, you know, it's interesting in this day and age, like, and you mentioned it at you know, near the start of the show, where these game consoles were designed around being social and, you know, and playing with your friends, how the traditional online leagues have sort of stumbled out of the gate. But conversely, like my team, you know, which is the card playing, you know, VC driven mode. How is that doing? Is that really popular? I mean, it certainly seems to be a focus. Whenever I turn the game on, you know, it pops up and tells me, oh, there's some new shoes for my player. Or there's new this or new that, for my team. How is my team doing from your perspective? Is that something that you are personally into? And what's the community like around my team? Because it is a fairly, not brand new, but it is sort of a fairly new way to experience 2K basketball.
My team is pretty big. You know, our management gets reports on what's being used, what's not being used in the game. So usually when you see focus on a particular area, it means it's being used heavily. And my team is a big mode for us. And guys seem to love it and enjoy it. Myself, it kind of throws me off with having different teams with different uniforms on different floors. I can't get into it. You know what I'm saying? I like the concept. And maybe if I played it long enough to get, you know, that's not, I hate to say it, but it's not basketball to me to have our logo be one thing, our jerseys be something else. We're playing on the floor from somebody else. I just can't focus on that.
You know what it means at the end of the day. You know what it means, right? We're old. You and I.
Oh, God. I was hoping you didn't. That's not what it meant. I'm the old fogey now, right? In my day, everybody wore the same uniform.
Oh, my God.
Man.
Oh, man. All right. So one of the other things that I'm fascinated by, like, you know, you again, from the outside, on the inside, what has been the biggest or the biggest surprises to you now that you've really gotten full exposure to what it takes to make one of these games and the tough decisions that have to get made? Or, like, I'm curious what the biggest surprises have been to you since you've joined the team.
There have been a few, but the cost associated with decisions. I didn't realize that every decision has a cost. And great developers evaluate that cost and try to get the most bang for the buck. And by cost, you're talking about either person hours, you're talking about tools, you're talking about, you know, anytime you ask somebody to work on something, they're not by virtue working on something else.
Right.
And so you're like, hey, I'd like to tune these layups a certain way. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, the game is crashing. So, you know what I'm saying? But the real-time cost of decisions and the complexity, Rich, of how quickly these games are coming together and how many changes are happening every single day, it really is mind-blowing. And you kind of get to the point when you really understand how complex these things are that you're almost amazed that it works. You know, if I say that and have it make sense, man, because there are so many moving parts to this game. And 2K has brilliant. I'm sure every game team has brilliant engineers, but these guys are really brilliant. You know, I'm not saying I'm the smartest guy, but it's very seldom that I'm the stupidest person in the room. And that happens all day long. I'm telling you, Rich, you just
hate that.
But you know what? These guys are so kind. I mean, you know, they could crush you with a single word. You know, I'm asking them some simple stuff, you know, and they take time out the day to help me. But when you have that much brain power, you know, and you look at the issues and you got the brain power and you have the passion, and it's almost indescribable how difficult it is to make a great game. It's really, really, really difficult. And I didn't think it was that difficult. You know, saying, you know, coming in from the community, oh, yeah, I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to take care of that. You know?
Yeah.
You know, and you spend a lot of time saying, oh, now I see why that happens. Oh, okay. You know?
So how has that changed your perspective on other sports games? Because, you know, you play Madden. You play other sports games and other video games as well. How has that changed your perspective on the games that you play for fun or just to check out what's going on?
Well, I tell you what, I'm a lot more understanding when a game doesn't have everything I want. But, you know, you evaluate things different when you understand what goes on under the hood. And every company is different, you know, and every game, different types of games are developed differently. But, you know, and sometimes you can pick up some things that can help you when you look at how other people have made some certain design decisions or what have you. So I think you look at the games a little bit different, but certainly with a more forgiving eye for some things that may stick out that may bother you.
You know, and sports games now, especially on the new consoles, yes, they are an annual release, and they're an annual release because of the contractual obligations of the licensing agreements. We all understand that. But even a game that comes out in September will get patched 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. How do you think that is a good thing that we have the ability to continually update these games, or do you think that it actually is a drawback? Not that, you know, you hear people say, oh, you know, the lazy game developers, they know they can patch it so they ship a broken game. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking right. about, do you think it is ultimately a positive that modifications can be made to a game after it ships versus, you know, in the old days when the game shipped, that was the game?
Good question, Rich. I think it's a positive, and I'll tell you why. Games, like when you look at, I just keep it in our product, 2K, right? You look at 2K15, the amount of content that's in 2K15 compared to 2K8 or 9 or 10 mm-hmm. is incredible. Mm-hmm. The amount of content, the amount of teams, the amount of jerseys, but the development period hasn't grown.
Right, right.
So for those that say, man, if they couldn't patch a game, you know, the games would be better. Listen, guys are going all out, and when the deadline comes is when the deadline comes.
Right.
So games only get better because you have more time, you know, that you're working through that date. So the game ships, you're still working, you know, possibly for a day one patch or what have you. So I think overall it's a net benefit. Anytime you touch the code, you have the potential to make something worse, though.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, we don't just continue to patch and patch, because you could do, I mean, you know, you'll never be done. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
You'll never be done. But I look at games like Halo, GTA, games that ship once every 4 or 5 years, they still ship with issues.
Sure.
So it stands to reason that a game that ships every year is going to have some type of issue. So I think it's a net positive, as long as the team doesn't get too adventurous on what they're trying to accomplish with those patches. And that's why sometimes you'll see a dev team maybe stop short of where the community wants to go, mm-hmm. because some things need a full development cycle. You know what I'm saying? Just because it's an issue doesn't mean we can really do a decent job of fixing it without introducing too many other variables.
Right. Well, it's like Lorne Michaels says about Saturday Night Live, right? We don't go on because we're ready. We go on because it's 11:30 on a Saturday night.
Exactly. That is exactly it. That was a good question. I think, you know, when I was on the outside, you may tend to think that. But I got to tell you, I've never seen a lazy developer. I don't know what one of those people would look like. You know what I'm saying? Certainly not a lazy engineer.
Yeah.
You know, these are not simple tasks that are being carried out. You know, these are complex problems that people are trying to solve, and they're trying to solve it in math and C++. It's not just, oh, yeah, we should have him box out. You know what I'm saying? That's a math problem.
Very complex math. And yeah, like you say, a guy can look at you and literally speak an equation to you, and you just look at him, your eyes blinking like, all right, I guess you're right. I got nothing.
That's it. You know, I'm asking him to translate. So that means he'll box out?
I want to know, will he or will he not box out? Just somebody tell me, please. So NBA 2K yearly is one of the top sellers, not just top sellers in sports games. Like, you know, every year it's in the NPD top 10. It's often cited as the best sports game in the business. It won, you know, the Pasta Padre Community Award as the best sports game. It won the Operations Sports Community Award as the best sports game. It won the Operations Sports Editors Award as the best sports game. Came in second for Press Row because MLB The Show came in. I know. It was my number one.
Sorry, Rich.
It was my personal number one. So just want to make sure you're aware of that. But I will say this. And I've heard you guys talk about this on Sim Nation. It seems to me that the mainstream media, games media, not all, right? Because there are friends of mine that I would not lump into this category.
Right.
But it seems to me that there are many mainstream media sites that seem to be either overwhelmed by NBA 2K or just not interested in it. Do you get that sense? Are you aware of that? Is the team, the development team, aware of that? And is that an issue for you guys? Or is that perhaps, do you view that maybe even as a blessing in disguise?
No, it's something, definitely something we're aware of. It's something that we're trying to strategize around, making our game easier to understand, easier to get into, making the game more accessible, while at the same time keeping the depth that keeps the fans engaged. You know, I think a lot of games possibly struggle with that, but maybe us more than anybody else, because I tell you what, Rich, going back, I was always one of the guys, like, I love basketball, Rich. I absolutely love it. But until 2K lost football, I never felt like anybody really took making a basketball game serious. Hmm. When you look back at games like Madden, they would have in-depth practice modes during the season. I mean, yes, just the features that were in those games. Then you look at basketball game, it's just basketball. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no extra modes. There's no this. There's no that. And so I really feel like, as far as strategy, basketball was getting the short end of the stick. And people feel like it's a basketball game. You should just be able to pick it up and play it. And there's not a whole lot going on under the hood, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, being a lifelong basketball guy, I understand that strategy is a huge part of it. You know, and so I think because that's a strong point of 2K, we have to make that more accessible, and we have to do a better job of teaching and showing, you know, all the things that really truly do separate our game from other games. And I feel like once 2K lost football, that basketball really became front and center for them. And I think the strategy parts of the game came in. I think you saw different practice modes and different modes and different things being added to it. And that's just something me from the sidelines. That's how I would see it, right? I would like, man, I pick up a soccer game, it's got all these modes. I pick up a baseball game, it's got all these modes and strategy. Basketball, five guys, ball, there you go. And so to answer your question, I think that that might be leftover from that. You know, that might be the hangover from that, is people feeling like there's not a whole lot to a basketball game anyway, you know, when actually there really is, at least mm-hmm. in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the, you know, for all of the accolades that the NBA 2K series rightfully gets, one of the legacy issues with the game has been problems with online. And we all know that, you know, the NBA 2K14 launched, and then even for a while after, it struggled online. And when it launched again this year, the first couple of weeks there was a struggle. It significantly improved. And, you know, we've been very vocal on Press Row about, you know, how the game has been much better from an online perspective. But it still had that rough start. And those rough starts and, you know, the issues that launched with 2K14 stick with people for a long time. Long time, and in some instances negatively impact the reviews scores and, you know, the perception of these games. You guys feel that? I'm sure that's got to be frustrating when you put all of the time and effort into things on the court, and then things that are out of your control will negatively impact how the game is perceived. Even, like I said, after a couple of weeks when things clear up, people, you know, remember what happened on day one and day two. That's got to be frustrating to deal with, I would imagine.
Certainly to a degree it's frustrating. But when you talk about 2K, you talk about a team environment, and you believe in your team, right? You believe in the people that work on that portion, that they're doing everything that they possibly can do to make that work. And that's just how I look at it. You know, if we would be possibly a 10, if we didn't have you know, those little stumbles at the beginning. So we have areas where we can improve. We still have areas where we can grow. But, you know, you never want to be the guy to throw your team under the bus. So we stand with them and believe that it's going to get better.
And it's certainly not like NBA 2K is alone on an island of issues where every other game that ships and launches is just smooth sailing. I mean, you know, unfortunately, when we're dealing with these new consoles, you know, launch day, launch week, technical problems, PSN being down, Xbox Live getting DDoS'd. I mean, man, it just seems like these new consoles, for all of, boy, when everything works, man, it's fantastic. But boy, a whole lot of stuff has to work for these things to really get the full experience. It's kind of crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, you would almost think, you know, hey, man, it's 2015. You know, you just plug it in. Everything should work. you know, but that, you know, I think I was saying on the last podcast I was on, that's part of the adventure of making a game.
Right.
You know, one of the great things about 2K is we know we have all the ingredients every year to possibly be in that game of the year conversation.
Yeah.
You know, can we bring everything together? Can we get online popping? Can we, you know, and that's a great thing, is to know that you have all the ingredients to make the soup. Just don't burn it. You know, and especially with the guys that we brought on, you know, they had a fantastic team before we got here, Rich. You know, they weren't necessarily hurting for talent.
No. Well, it definitely feels to me, as I said earlier, that not only is the team more responsive, but it feels like the game is much more community based, and that has to make people feel better when they're playing a game that they feel like their opinions are being heard. There are a lot of sports games out there where the communities complain that that their concerns and voices are not heard. I don't hear that at all about NBA 2K, and I think that's a direct result, like I said, of folks like yourselves and Leftos and Scott O'Gallagher joining the team. So that's got to be gratifying to you, I would think.
It definitely is. I was a gamer in the community. There's nothing worse than feeling like you have something really that will really benefit the game to say, and nobody's listening. You know, back in the 04s, 05, 06s, a lot of us felt like that, you know, and that was really to put another push for Sim Nation and, you know, other guys making videos, wanting to be heard. Because at the end of the day, your loudest, most vocal fans just want to enjoy the game, man. That's all, you know, and they believe they have something to say that can help you. To help them, help you, help me, help you. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so that does it. You know, it makes me feel good. But it's something that, you know, we want to continue to work on. We want to continue to develop. We want to continue to listen. And I think over time, you know, and 2K is really good about this. If you look at the year before's community's notes on things we'd like to see improved in the game. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the game when it comes out. Of course, there's going to be new issues. But I think more than any other game, you know, 2K really attacks those lists. They listen, people, we want starting lineups. You know, we want to see the starters are in the game, you know. But people don't talk about the things that they got. They talk about the things that you left out.
There you go. Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. So last question. It sounds to me like you have big plans for NBA 2K moving forward. I mean, it's a terrific experience. I think I believe that it has created basketball fans because it is so good. I think there's a direct correlation between enjoying NBA 2K and then turning on your TV and enjoying the NBA in front of you and vice versa. But it sounds to me like you also think that there is a long list of things that you can do to continue to extend the NBA 2K experience. I mean, is that a fair statement? Can we expect, obviously, incremental improvements, but it sounds like we can also expect some really unexpected things and then over the course of the next few years from the NBA 2K franchise?
I would say in the most humble way possible, absolutely. Mike Wang is the head of our gameplay team. His name has been associated with some of the greatest basketball games in the history of gaming. I think when it's all done, he'll go down as one of the greatest basketball game producers of all time. And, you know, this is the guy that's leading this team. This is the guy that helped to assemble this team. And, you know, under his direction, he's got a lot of experience. I bring something to the table. They got guys like Zach, who's been there, who was the head of the College Hoops game.
Love that game.
Oh, me too.
I love that game.
You know, one of the greatest college basketball games ever. You got Jerson.
2K8. You know, this, oh, man.
Oh. I still play it, Rich. I still have a dynasty.
I will tell you, I went to a little tiny Division I school called Ryder, and my buddy who went to St. Peter's, they were both rivals in the MAC. We would have epic battles against each other. Little Ryder versus St. Peter's in College Hoops 2K8. But we might have been the only two guys in the world who played Ryder versus St. Peter's, but they were amazing games. Amazing.
Yes, yes. So I said all that to say is that this is the team. Every day we come to work to try to make the best game that we've ever played. That's what we're, you know, that's what we're in the business for, is to make something that we absolutely cannot put down. You know, average is not good enough for this team. Guys are pushing every single day. And, you know, and that's just the gameplay team. And then you got the presentation team. You got, you know, everybody is like that at 2K. The work environment is second to none. We have outstanding leadership that motivates you, you know, like I said, Greg Thomas, I owe that guy the world. If he asked me to run through a wall, I'd ask him how many times. And I think if you went down the line, everybody in the company would say the same thing. So it's bigger than just getting a check and working on the game. It's about trying to create something that lasts, something that'll be there throughout all times. And I'm not saying that we will accomplish that. I'm saying that is the goal. And, you know, how often in life do you have an opportunity to be the best in the world at what you do? And that's what I think about every day when I go in. I was like, man, I can be the best in the world if I get it done today. I know Scott thinks like that. You know, I know Leftos thinks like that. You know, we want to be the best in the world. And so, you know, we try to put the work in to get there. And when we come up short, we listen to the people that holler and scream about how short we came.
I love it. Thank you so much, Dino Samuel. We will not make the mistake again of not having you come back on. This has been an absolute delight. I could go on for another hour or two, but I want to respect your time. But I also want to set us up for having you come back on in the future to talk not only NBA 2K, but just sports and video games and life. How's that sound?
Man, that sounds excellent. Rich, I want to thank you for having me on, man. I feel like I've been called up to the big leagues, man. This is fantastic. I'm a big fan of the show. I'm listening all the time. You guys have riveting conversations. And, you know, I think the show is necessary. You know, you can come to one place. You got to hear from people in the industry. You hear their thoughts, not just on games. You hear their thoughts on life. And it's, you know, it's a great thing. It's a great thing. And I appreciate being a part.
Well, thank you for the kind words, sir. Nino Samuel, the Czar, the legend, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts. Congratulations on making one of the best basketball games / video games that I've played in years. I play it every day. I'm a junkie. I'm not ashamed to admit that I can't stop playing this game. It's the grind, man. I love the grind.
Thank you.
So thank you, sir, and we will talk with you again soon.
Sounds good.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. We ask that you please subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and the Windows phones. We also ask that you give us a rating. That really helps us a lot. We also ask that you please follow each of our panelists on Twitter, and they are as follows. Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good. Pasta Padre's Brian Redi at Pasta Padre. Polygon Submit Sarkar at Submit Sarkar. That Sports Gamer's TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer. US Gamer's Cat Bailey at The_CatBot. Operation Sports Chris Sanner at ChrisSNR. And Operation Sports Steve No at Steve_OS. And of course me, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. So thank you so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it, and we really want to thank the great people at Operation Sports for making this show happen every single week. So thanks, and we'll see you again next time.